Hello, Cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 165 of Cyclocross Radio. On today's show, it's another media pit with Zach and Michael. We're going to talk about MVDP's return, a couple other Euro cross topics in there. Then we're going to move to the U.S. to do a recap of really rad festival of cyclocross that took place last weekend, and then also move on to Pan Ams and our prediction for what will happen in Midland, Ontario. And we'll get to all that in just a minute. First, I want to tell you about a new sponsor that we have for Cyclocross Radio. Really excited about having these folks on board. And it's serendipitous because they're also sponsoring Pan Ams up in Midland, Ontario. And this is Missing Link Adventure Tours. It is a farm stay recreation retreat specializing in cycling adventures for paved, gravel riding, and even cyclocross. So you're on this farm and they have like two sections that you can make like custom cyclocross courses on the farm. So come out there with a group of your friends, your team, your club. It's if you want to go on a brewery or artist studio tour on your bikes, you can do that. And then you can sort of have little races against each other. Group packages available. They can stay on the organic veggie farm where they source ingredients for their kitchen and guest meals. It sounds like just a really cool place to go. Would be great, you know, during the summer to get out there and really prepare for the upcoming cyclocross season, or even go do some gravel riding if you're going to be doing some gravel racing training. There's a ride itinerary designed to keep coach and rider happy. So if you don't want to miss out on your workouts, it's okay. They got you covered there. Trekking, you know, not your everyday ride. You got Trans-Canada Trail, logging trails to Alkening Park, you know, just a lot of cool stuff. And then if you were like, hey, we do cycling all year round, we want something different. In winter, they shift over to a family retreat setting, snowshoeing, tobogganing, other winter activities, including fat biking if you just can't stay off the bike. So, but anyway, Missing Link Adventure Tours sounds like a really great place to go. They're just starting up and want you to check out their website. That is MLAT.ca. So Missing Link Adventure Tours. MLAT.ca. Also follow them on Instagram at MLAT_ED, and on Facebook you can get to them at or Twitter at MLA Tours, Missing Link Adventure Tours. So excited to see those folks this weekend, and also it's something for all of us to go check out in the future. We are also again sponsored by Works Hydro Shot, and this is the portable power cleaner that we've been touting and has just gotten a great response from our cyclocross friends. It's something that has it's battery powered power washer, which is great. You don't have to find an electrical outlet. You just pop on the Works 20 volt power share batteries. You can draw water from a bucket. You can draw water from a 2 liter soda bottle with the bottle adapter, and it's just an easy, ready solution to cleaning your bike after a race. So they, as I said, this has been super popular. We've gotten a great response from this, selling a lot of folks on this as something they need in their cyclocross race kit, or even just at home after you get home. It's easy and doesn't take a lot of setup to get your bike clean. We are offering you 15% off all Hydro Shots and accessories. If you go to yourcleanbike.com, enter the promo code CLEANBIKE, and you'll get 15% off. Once again, that's yourcleanbike.com, and enter the promo code CLEANBIKE, CLEANBIKE. Finally, you know, we just had our donor drive. We still would love to get you into the Wide Angle Podium as a member to support all of the great content that we have on there. You know, we've talked about it a lot, but Slow Ride Podcast, Consummate Athlete, Bike Shop CX, The Gravel Lot, Life in the Peloton, Rodeo, this show, also the CX Heat Check and Cyclocross Television are part of the network. We'd love to have your support for that. A lot of people listen or watch, very few support. We want to sort of balance that out a little more. So we'd love to have your support in doing that. WideAnglePodium.com. All right, Media Pit with Zach and Michael. We're doing that right now. All right, we are back in the Media Pit with Zach and Michael. And I think that we've sort of touched on European cyclocross, even though, you know, we're only supposed to be American-based cyclocross now. I guess we should give it a little bit its due. So we're going to start with that this week, and especially we're starting with the return of what's that guy's name?
So funny story.
Yeah.
On that, I was using the initials, and because we had been covering Canadian nationals, and our second favorite Canadian was just apparently on my mind, I put MVDH in the title, and Michael texts me this morning. He's like, "While I'm totally flattered that you've equated me with Matthew Vanderpool."
Oh, you did this like on Cyclocross Magazine.
Oh, it was on the title of the post, and I was like, amazing. Wow, that's really embarrassing. And then I had to go through and fix it or whatever.
I feel like, Bill, you stole my dad joke thunder. So can you ask me how I'm doing, Bill?
Michael, how you doing?
I got to say, Bill, everything is coming up sevens, and it's really rad.
Oh, God. Every week.
Oh, finally, so Zach's clapping. You guys aren't groaning. I think I'm getting better. All right.
That was actually really good.
Thank you. It was really good. All right, great.
Yeah.
Okay, guys.
Yeah.
Vanderpool is back. I feel like I wanted to kick off the episode with this just because I feel like it's the big story. We've all been kind of waiting for this. I felt that there's so many things I want to talk about this, and I guess I actually wasn't sure how I felt about Vanderpool coming back until I watched him race. I think we had seen a lot. We mentioned this earlier that when you're watching a race and it's just the coverage of the guy off the front, after a while, that gets kind of boring. We kind of want to see the guys who are in, you know, second through fourth position. And I made the joke that that's who we've been watching this entire season. It was that battle back there, and it's been really good. You know, Vanderpool is watching him race is boring. It's like, yeah, watching him race has been boring, but there's actually really good racing happening behind. And so this was like, I was wondering how that dynamic was going to change. I was wondering, how have you guys thought about this? Like him coming back to the sport? Like, what have you guys been feeling?
Well, I think you're kind of getting at it. It felt like something was incomplete. Like when you know that the best is not racing and you're watching these other guys, you want to see how they compare. And so, yeah, it's good racing, but you know, you want to see the best. And I think there was that sense that the best was missing, and you know, it took him half a race, but he still looks pretty good.
Yeah, that was going to be where I was coming from, and sort of going off what you were saying, Michael, is what I think we were seeing up until Vanderpool came back. He sort of ruined this, or at least for the meantime, he ruined the narrative that we had, or that I was trying to construct about all cyclocross now is super teams and it's just road racing on dirt. And what you were having up until now was the Sauces versus the Lions. The Sauces were really taking it to the Lions for most of the season. And they, you know, it looked a lot like road strategy. I mean, they would send Michael Van Toorn out up the road just on a flyer. And then, you know, Tone Aerts would have to go chase him down. And as soon as he caught him, then Ellie Easerbeat would just take off and go. And that was, they were just setting it up, and it really looked like the, you know, the early kilometers of a one day race, and you know, until the moves happened. And then we also saw races where, you know, everybody was just coupling up. You know, you'd have like Sauces guy, Lions guy, you know, and then a couple meters back, Sauces guy and Lions guy who couldn't attack because then he'd bring the Sauces guy up to the first pair, you know, and it was very road racing like. And then you get this outlier, Vanderpool, who comes in here and he just sort of blows up the system late. But early on, it was the same thing. And what it looked like to me was it was the one guy without any help in the break, right? And they did it. They did the same thing. They had Easerbeat went out there early, and then Vanderpool had to cover that move. As soon as he got him back, Lauren Swick just, no, Michael Van Toorn now just took off like a shot. and was out there, and Vanderpool slowly had to bring him back. And as soon as he brought him back, that was when Lawrence Swick just came on. Like, did you see that move, like, in the mud? Yeah. I don't know what tires he was on, but they were different than everyone else's, because he just, like, shot through there. Like, they were sitting still, got this, you know, great, like, 20-30 meter lead right off the bat, and were like, okay, well, that's it. And that lasted maybe a lap with Swick out there. And then Vanderpool was finally, you know, able to get the diesel going and moved right up to his wheel. But by doing that, he put in such a huge effort that he left everyone behind. So then the road tactics were done, because, you know, Swick looked behind him and he was like, well, crap, there's nobody left to attack. You know, we're kind of done here. And then he hung out on as long as he could. And then eventually Vanderpool just rode off the front like he always does. And then it was back to racing as normal. And the whole super team concept just got blown out of the water.
Well, I think kind of what you're describing, though, is a little bit with the super team thing is a little bit of an indictment of what the Telnet Ball Law team has been not doing this season, right? Because we've seen where you had Tone Arts would be up there and he had no one else with him. Like, they could not get any other riders to match the pace of the Sauces team. And then you also had the dynamic where at Jingle Cross, where the Sauce guys bridged up to Ellie Easerbeat, and he was not happy when that happened at Jingle Cross.
Yeah, but, you know, who else does, like, Lars Vanderhaar, we're still waiting, and we may just be waiting until, I don't know, he hangs it up. I feel like he's just always a few steps behind. You got Quentin Hermans, who's just like counting the days until January 1, and he's out of there. Cornel Van Kessel's always, you know, like, kind of backed. I mean, who else? You know, it's kind of like,
well, I guess they don't have, it is a super team then.
They're really,
I think they're second tier. I mean, I think the Powell's team is just a stronger overall team, which is crazy to say.
What's going to happen? What's going to happen to them? Cornet and Quentin are leaving, and I'm curious to see what the Lions are going to do. I do want to say that Lars had a brief moment before Vanderpool came back that he was leading the Super Prestige. He won that weeknight race, and I was like, man, and he got like, what, second at some other race? And like, he like almost came back. Vanderpool looked rusty. It's hard to say Vanderpool is rusty, you know, he's so skilled, but he was making mistakes. He seemed out of sorts a bit, you know, kind of, you know, trying to figure out cyclocross again. It had been a while, and it was almost like seeing the Sauces and all their attacks. It was like a bird of prey. It was like a hawk being like bombarded by a bunch of robins, and he was just like sort of flustered, and like they kept putting in those moves, but like they really didn't. They don't like once Vanderpool got it all lined up, they were no match for him. I think the biggest tell was you know, Swick kind of got away with him and stayed away, but when Swick crosses the line in second, he just gives this shrug like, like, what are you gonna do?
One of my favorite parts after the race, and it's good we have our Dutch friends on Twitter who will sometimes translate the post-race interviews, and I think Vanderpool said exactly what you said. He said he was really feeling rusty and he was a little disappointed in how he was racing, because it just wasn't, you know, he wasn't really racing like he wanted to. And then like halfway through saying that, he sort of caught himself that, oh, I just destroyed everybody and I'm you know, complaining about not racing very well. And he sort of went into the whole, oh, but everybody, you know, is a really good race and everybody was like, is super fit right now and all that kind of stuff. But it was just kind of funny that like, he didn't even consider anybody. There's not even any competition out there. He's just worried about how he's doing. And for him, the effort of winning by however, you know, many seconds he won, just really wasn't up to snuff for what he's looking for.
23 seconds. Yeah, that's not good for Vanderpool. Yeah.
Since this is the media pit, I think you know, we always like the storylines and stuff. It seemed like there was maybe a little bit of added intrigue to this return because of how spectacularly he exploded at Road Worlds. You know, the last time we all saw him was him dropping like a stone out of that lead group at Yorkshire Worlds. And so I think that added some to it. And, you know, you talked about like, is Vanderpool boring or whatever, you know, just go to YouTube and look at the viewers, the number of viewers on either the cycling games or the GCN feeds. I mean, I commented, maybe to you guys, I even commented that it seemed like it was at least twice as much as typical on the GCN feed, if not three times as much. So, you know, go look at the numbers, and they were the highest of the season for that race. And so, you know, maybe it's just a one-off thing, and it's definitely something that I'll be keeping my eyes on, but at least from the folks who are watching on GCN and, you know, cycling games or whatever, it sure as hell seemed like there was a lot of interest in what Matthew Vanderpool was going to do.
Oh, yeah, the crowds. I mean, the crowds looked much bigger. I mean, to my eyes, I don't know what you guys thought, but it just seemed like there was more people there. I mean, you... Other thing to bring up, talking about, you know, as media members, the cable cams at Roedevoort were amazing.
Yeah, dude, they have those things dialed, man.
Yes.
They are so good. Like, there's this one shot where it's like the camera is right above the riders, and the riders kind of coming up this little levee or dike, and they kind of go back down, and it's like, it's almost like a spiral effect. It's like I don't know, it's like a super cool thing. But through the cable cams, you could see people running from, you know, feature to feature. And, you know, friend Ethan Gladding made a note that he was feeling anxious about seeing that many people on the course and how hard it would be getting around to take photos. And I was like, yeah, that's a very good point. So just, Zach, I think the interest is still there. And people are, at least, yeah, these first few races to see how he does. They want to come out.
One thing that I wanted to bring up on here, you know, we're talking about the super team aspect of it and Vanderpool coming up, but there is actually one other guy, not on one of these teams, who made his mark. I mean, maybe more at Copenberg Cross, but he's also, you know, did all right at Roedevoort, and that's Tom Pidcock. You know, really kind of giving Ellie Easerbeat his... you know, a run for his money, both in the measuring stick and out there on the cyclocross track.
I've enjoyed watching Pidcock, and it's really interesting to see him kind of take a different track approach to his cycling career versus, you know, folks like Vanderpool and Wout. I mean, he's a little bit younger, but also some on the road like Remco Evenepoel. And, you know, Pidcock, he was on the Lions, a bigger squad, and wanted to kind of do his own thing. And he's not, you know, he's not going to a World Tour road team. So I just find him a really interesting character. He's a person to watch his story. And he is a rider who reminds me a lot of Vanderpool, just in the sort of very dynamic and aggressive way that he races. And it's like he's made... In Copenberg Cross and Roedevoort, he's made some big mistakes. He's rode a little bit too aggressively and crashed. And I think that once he sort of buttons all that up, that he's going to be winning some of those races.
Should we talk about the women at Roedevoort?
I think we definitely should. So Roedevoort is like... it's just a field. It's literally a farmer's field, right? And it's got those, to me, from someone from Louisiana, I call them levees. I don't know if those are just specifically made for the course, but those are sort of the features. And
from a water management point of view, do those have any kind of use or anything we should know about, Zach?
Well, I mean, if it's a levee, it's probably made to channel the stream and keep it either, you know, potentially in the farmer's field if you want to flood the fields for planting, but most likely keep it out. So they keep Mike safe. That's what levees do down in Louisiana, is they keep Michael from being underwater.
That's true.
But yeah. Basically it's a earthen grass, almost ridgeline, you know,
yes,
hump that runs all the way down the path of the field. And I think one of the things that I will just say before getting back to you, Michael, is that this is one of the things that I think if you look at Belgian cyclocross tracks versus what American, especially in the grassroots level of course design, how they approach that. I don't know if it's our, you know, Scandinavian sort of Germanic way of looking at things, but we will see that feature and say, okay, straight line right across it, straight line, either one way or the other, or straight over the top. And, you know, like Route of Order or any of these other courses, that's not the case. You know, you're like going up this thing diagonally and then jutting back down on yourself, back around it. And it just makes it, and that's what makes, I think that's what makes cyclocross that much more difficult on those tracks. It's really not, you know, it is topographical, but as you said, it's just a field, but it's just how they're able to come up with these angles on it that I don't think we always see if we were looking at the same field.
Although, to be fair, we had at our local race on Sunday, they had like this morning feature that was kind of, so you hit it diagonally. So it was just a lot of speed. You hit it diagonally. In the afternoon, you went up a run up, you went down, and you had the option to go back up this diagonal. And they didn't put it in. And I was like, I asked the race director, I was like, what's up, man? He's like, way too hard, man. Way too hard. We got to go easy on everyone. And I was like, no, you don't. Like, what are you doing? Like, go back up that shit. Like, that's hard. So it just kind of reminded me of, you know, like in Belgium, they're just like, and we can obviously get to Berrigan. We never really talked about that one.
Yeah.
That, but they make it hard. Like, everything is really hard.
Yeah. So one of those hills, those levees, was a big factor in the women's race. Right at the beginning, it was a huge pileup, and really it was like, it was Alvarado, Kant, and a few other riders kind of got away, and they really created a huge gap. And I hate to say things when I haven't watched the complete race, but I feel like Alvarado sort of at that point established a gap. And got away, and she won that race. But Sana Kant in second, I mean, I feel like she dropped out of a race last week, I believe. Or no, she didn't drop out. She just really struggled. So I wasn't sure what was going on with her. Getting second place now seems, I always say the Sana watch is like, all right, seems good. We're on track. We're on track with Feb. Zach's got something though. He's gonna drop.
Well, so first, I think the sauna watch has to be a thing. I want the Bodekheimer sauna watch. You know, perhaps you can, like, you know, is it October sauna? Is it January and in November? I love it. I think that should be a thing. Apparently, she crashed during pre-ride at Havre and like hurt her ribs or something, and so she was just commenting after that race how she couldn't pedal. She was like, I think she said, if I go to the masseuse, it won't matter because I didn't pedal at all. And so my legs will be fine, or something to that effect. And then she didn't race at Copenhagen. So, I mean, it was good to see her back because it looked like she was dealing with an injury of some sort. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe the break, maybe she needed the rest or something. I don't know. But like, she looked strong. One thing that we're seeing in, you know, the last few years, like European cross has been, on the women's side, has been known for these huge groups, right? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 riders. And more, it just seems like every race we're kind of seeing someone ride away. It's more the norm, you know. Yara Kastelein, Copenberg was over in the first 4 minutes. If you're looking at like a rider going solo off the front, you know, she was gone. Alvarado was gone at, Rudervorda on Sunday, Bern, World Cup Bern, Amory Wurst kind of went solo off the front of that one. I mean, you've just been seeing a lot of these like solo wins from this rotating cast of the young Dutch women, and then Arzufi, the seven squad, to go back to your intro. You know, what do you guys think about that in terms of like this kind of like changing dynamic?
I think it's interesting that that you win a race and then you sort of slot back down into the top 10. You know, we're not getting these things like it's, you know, Sven's going to win and then Niels is going to win and then Sven's going to win again, you know, not to take it back to the men, but that's kind of what we used to see. And it was always going to be, you know, two or three people at the top, where here, you know, look at this, like you got Alvarado winning and she's obviously the had the most success this year, but then Yara's in fifth place and Amory Wurst is in ninth place and Arzufi's in 10th place. You know, these are people who have been up there every once in a while, and I'd feel like they're almost like pace lining through races. It's like, you know, okay, we're going to lead this one, and then we're going to set this one back. And it's just crazy. And I think the other main thing that, you know, we would be remiss not to mention in this Rutavorta race is Katie Compton, and they're in third place, and then Katie Keough in fourth. You know, so two really, I think, strong rides by those two that are you know, holding their own, sort of making the right decision, I think, at this point to do this European lifestyle.
So I had this idea that, like, really, you're when the women's field were seen, and I feel like, Zach, you probably brought this up before, is like the youth movement is like finally coming through, and yeah, you really had, I'd seen that earlier, where like Sana Kant wasn't, you know, in anywhere in there, Ellen Van Looy is not factoring at the front of the race, either is, you know, Lechner, really looking at the front of the end of the race, and it's really all the youngsters. But once again, like you said, Rutavorta, Compton, Kant in second, Compton in third, Lechner, we saw her on the podium last week. So I had that idea that that was happening, but, you know, storyline.
They also changed. I mean, one, they didn't win, though. I mean, that's the thing, is like Kant was with Alvarado, and Alvarado just had way too, this again going back to my theory, I mean, her first lap just burst was too much for, you know, Kant to stick with. But I guess along those lines, my other question, so I think, you know, one thing about the past few years is it seemed like it was really gripping and intriguing because we had a lot of established riders, your Sana Kants, your Katie Comptons, your Katie Keoghs, your Brammeyers, your Wymans, your Brands even, you know, who are these established names that we all know. And so then you throw in your Evie Richards or your occasional Alvarado, it's like, oh, here's this newcomer. But here there's this whole, like, are you guys more interested with it? Because it should be super interesting. We've got different women. Anyone can win any race. But we kind of don't know many of them. You know, Yara Kastelein has just burst onto the scene. Anne-Marie Wurst, we know, you know, she's been around. So are you guys more interested? I mean, is this more intriguing, you know, or is it going to take some time for us to kind of learn these new names and these new people to kind of be a part of our early morning sketchy live stream watching?
To the known names and to the favorites. And I think that's what we saw with Vanderpoel. I think if Wout comes back, we're going to see a huge, you know, uptick when he's there. If Sané starts winning again, I think that the same thing. I mean, I think for most, I mean, I called it the Tiger Woods effect and, you know, in the Slack channel. And I think it's true. You know, he shows up even when he's playing horribly and people are going to tune in because it is those established names. I mean, I remember not even being a Bulls fan, but you get sucked in when Jordan's like winning championships and you're like, all right, I guess I'm sort of cheering for this team. And you're like, I should be cheering for the underdog here, you know, but you don't. And I think that's the same thing in here. On the other side of the coin, I like it. I think it's really exciting. I think it's great to get other names out there. And I think we're still, even though we may be winding down in North America and Europe, they're just winding up as far as the cyclocross season goes. And I think as it goes farther along, we're going to, you know, these are going to be the household names. I think it's going to change that quickly on the women's side. And it's also, it's a lot of different, you know, we see the diversity there. It's a lot of different teams. It's a lot of different countries. It's a lot of different ages. And the men's side is just homogenous, you know, it's like all these dudes from Belgium all on the same team. And this at least is something, something different. And I know we get in trouble for comparing the men and the women too much, but I like it. I think it is good for the sport. And I think it's interesting when you get these. I loved it when we had the youth movement. I loved it when like Vanderpoel and Wout came up. I loved it when Lars Vanderhaar was just like throwing a wrench into what people knew about racing. So any of that sort of disruption to the status quo, I'm all for. And I think that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah, I'm totally into it. I think some of these names are going to be household names at the end of the season. I mean, I don't know how many times I have gone and re-looked up Yara Kastelein to be like, where does she come from? Like, what did she win before? Like, what's her history? Like, I want to know more. I will say that there is a part of me that is a bit skeptical because we got burned, or I got really burned last year by Denise Bergertime Betsema. So yeah, when someone rises real quickly, I'm like, oh, I really want to, like, you know, join in and in your supporter club, but I'm holding back for a bit. I'm, you know, I gotta wait. So
I don't know. And that's always, I think, with anybody across the board, that's always. Don't have heroes in cycling. Yeah. That's kind of my mantra.
Fair.
Right. Not heroes, but people you enjoy Sportsmen watching. They don't have to women be your heroes. Yeah. Well, folks, this is not a necessarily results show, so we can just kind of freely move about, right? I feel like we've got some good media takes on the kickoff to the Euro, to Vanderpoel's return. Koppenberg Cross, you know, like, briefly, I just kind of want to mention that because I know that's the race that features the infamous Koppenberg climb. And wow, I'm a bad cycling fan because I can't remember, I guess, Tour of Flanders is the race that it's in. I mean, that was part of my joke in the intro was a sweep by the 777 team. And I think I mentioned this last week talking about the Euro super teams. Really, that team is on fire, and it's actually been kind of fun to see that. I'm trying to think if I've seen that on the women's side before, you know, like who do we have big teams on the women's side? I'm trying to think, you know, like Ellen Van Looy has a teammate, I believe, but I don't know who she is.
Well, they kind of, it seems like they got kind of dragged kicking and screaming by the UCI to even having, to have a woman, you know, have a woman on their teams. And we saw this, I remember a couple of years ago at the World Cups, you know, Marlux Bingle, back when they were a team, had like this big trailer, the men all rode together, and, you know, poor Laura Verdonschot was traveling with Helen Wyman in her van. It was just like, you know, they weren't even allowed to be part of the team. It was like, oh, you're on your own. And so, you know, I think it is cool that you bring it up. We've got 777, we've got Helen Wyman's outfit, the Xperza Pro CX team that are going all in on women's cyclocross, and those riders are already delivering results to show for it. So it seems like there is a change where supporting a women's team has become a thing.
UCI saw the error in their ways in what they consider to be equality and rescinded the rule that every team needs to have not only a woman, but also a man on it. That was in the rule changes for this season, that they used better judgment and decided not to implement that rule. So therefore these, because it was, you know, I just having worked with Trek some while that was all going on, they were, you know, the Trek Factory Racing team, which is all for cyclocross, is all women, was, you know, had to go out and find a dude to put on their team, and thankfully it didn't come to that. One thing that I do want to, before we leave the European side, just, and maybe this is a good segue into getting into really rad in the US, is we talk about the internationalization of the sport, or lack thereof, but this past weekend was kind of crazy in the amount of races that were, you know, we sit here and complain sometimes about, oh, there's a race in California and there's a race on the East Coast, and I think it's a valid complaint, because our the top of the sport is not very big, you know, we don't have so many people racing, but in much closer quarters to that, I mean, look at, like, you had Rutavorta, you had a French race that Steve Chanel and Matthew Bolo got third. I mean, just like sort of a fun race right there happening in France. You had a race in Spain that Philippe Orts, you know, a guy who's like high up in the UCI was racing, so he's taken out of that. So they almost need, you know, they need to come up with a national European series, I think, is what's going on, or the whole sport's going to fall apart, because right now there's too many races in too many different places. We're not seeing the best of the best all in one.
It's talking about having good events. I wasn't there, but the word on the Twitter sphere and all the riders, it seems that Really Rad is a pretty awesome event in Massachusetts.
Well, so it starts with the race organizer owns a race and events production company. You know, again, not necessarily that they are professional race organizers, but like all the fencing, all the barriers that you see at bike races, that's part of what they do. So they're going to have the best looking course out there. It's going to be orange fencing up and down the whole thing because they own it all, which is a positive. That's awesome that they can do that. And they also care about it, you know, and like we were talking about in previous weeks, like what we do at Charm City and Go Cross and DCCX, they do the same thing as well. They have a dedicated media person who's out there who's paid, and she is doing the live tweeting and doing Instagram and you know, sending out press releases, I believe, and providing photos. They hire Tom Parsons, so they have Dirt Wire coverage of it. You know, the money is spent to get the word out there, and the infrastructure of the event is at a professional level. And I think if you just check those boxes, A, you're going to get riders to come because they know it's going to be an event that people are going to see. And B, it's going to get national coverage, which it has. You know, even on this weekend where, you know, you weren't getting any of the Canadians because they were all racing nationals, but the fields were still good and it was still compelling racing, and we got to see it. You know, we can go to Dirtwire TV on YouTube and see all the highlights, and that's what I like. I mean, I think that just makes that's the kind of event we want in the country.
Well, in the Vittoria, I mean, the Vittoria series is kicking off this weekend at NoHo, right. But they use the same people. Lauren LeClaire is great. She does their press. She's so pro, does a great job with it. You know, Adam Meyerson, I think, was involved in helping make sure, at least the emails came from Adam, I think. So, you know, they have such a good team that they put together.
Yeah, it's Adam. Adam Sykes is the promoter but he works well with Adam. He's a great guy, cares a lot about the sport, wants to do this. And yeah, I want to make it up there some year. You know, wasn't able to do it this year, but it'd be a cool event to go to.
Yeah, but just like going back to kind of what we discussed on the last episode, you know, they do a great job. And I will say this, we talked about creating your own media and stuff, and so last week I get a text message from Michael Vandenham, and he's like, yo man, I was listening to Cyclocross Radio in the media pit, and I was like, thank you very much, I appreciate it. You're still the second favorite Canadian. But he was like, he's like, you know, I was thinking about what you guys were saying. He's like, let's get some press going for Canadian Nats. And so he's like, what do you need? And so, you know, I coordinated with him. He got quotes. I got quotes from some of the other riders because I have a good relationship with Jen and Magali. And I thought it was a pretty banger preview that I put together pretty quickly. And, you know, and we did it again. We're doing it again. It'll be up by the time this goes up. But a race report, you know, working on building those. You build those relationships. I know that I can just hit up Jen, Magali. They'll get back to me right away. And it was all Michael, you know. So I guess something good came out of that.
I feel like we want to talk about Pan Ams and a little preview, but before we go there, I think there's some things to take away from Really Rad that I kind of want to hit on, and mm-hmm. one of them, just from hearing from people on the ground, it sounds like Curtis White was really dominant, and listening to his Dirtwire interview, he's really happy with where his form is and where he's going into the Pan Am, so that's going to be a pretty interesting... I'm excited to see that, and I also, the other note was, you know, on the women's side, you had Katie Klaus winning day one and Rebecca Farringer winning day two, but seeing the sort of maturity of Rebecca Farringer, able to like take the loss on Saturday and learn from that and figure out how to race in a different way and then beat Katie Klaus.
Yeah,
her main
thing in that race was that she wasn't as good as Katie in the sand, wanted to make sure that she was leading into the sand, and then once it got back to the power section, she could just like, you know, throttle it and put a little hurt into Katie, which is what it did. Came down to she was able to get away from there. But I think the main storyline that I would take away from Really Rad is the double LL Cool J happenings, one in each race. Don't call it a comeback. You got Tobin Ortenblad finally breaking through, making it onto two podiums, I think a second and a third. Yep. And then on the other side, yep. Day one, Ella Noble kind of fighting for the top steps before having a mechanical of some sort, and then day two coming back and grabbing third place and kind of coming back into form. So those were the two, I think, good to see storylines, you know, especially we kind of been watching Tobin for a while, who's been racing. Ellen went and I think was sort of resetting and figuring out what she needed to do and training away from cyclocross. Tobin was kind of figuring it out, you know, in the trenches. And I'm really excited for him that it seems like it's starting to come back around. So this will be good to see. And I think we need, I always, you know, talk about Tobin being that instigator out there in a good way. And I think we need that again. It'll be good to have him back in that fold with Kerry and Curtis and Hyde and the Donnelly boys and everyone else up there at the front.
Well, I was going to say, interesting. He will be at NoHo this weekend, though. So he
okay.
making the choice to race at NoHo. So it's kind of an interesting choice on his part.
Well, I mean, is it interesting or is it just a smart choice? I mean, if you look at, if he's looking at this realistically, the trajectory, if there is a UCI race out there, if he's still looking to get that mojo back, why go bang your head against, you know, the wall with Curtis White, who, as Michael was saying, is like, everything is going awesome right now. I went hard on day two, not just because I wanted to win, but it was a good training day, and we were just pushing it as hard as we could because he just wants that jersey against next week. And yeah, I mean, it's an expensive trip to go to Canada where he's already in New England, so why not just go race that race and still get that experience and get that good effort in a UCI race. We can sit there and you know, throw shade on people for racing one race versus the other, but the races exist. We want people to go. Adam puts on an awesome race, so may as well go and race it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of, that was kind of one of the bummers of the schedule. I mean, Adam was very vocal about that as the reigning Masters Pan Am champion, that his race was on the same date, so he wouldn't be able to go. And yeah, NoHo looks like an awesome race that I've always wanted to go. And Tom Parsons has done great coverage of that race. I think one note was that I saw on the highlights of Really Rad that Ellen NoHo rolled a tubular on day one and had to run. She was like so many minutes behind, but there was a great shot where Tom is like running next to her while filming, and she's like, I really screwed the pooch on this one, like, or something like that. I don't know what she said, but I thought that was a great moment. Great capture by Tom. And also, talk about comebacks. Katie, don't call her Hermione. Klaus really kind of coming back from the, really finding her groove again. You know, last time, you know, she raced the World Cups and then she went over and did Worlds. And, you know, her World Cup results maybe weren't as good as she wanted to be. But what her results at Really Rad kind of reminded me of what we saw in Ruts of Guts last year, Bill, where she was at the front and winning races and sort of like,
yeah, I got to think aims. That she's was a little burnt out. I mean, doing a full road season, you know, still in school and then coming through and jumping right into cross had to have some sort of effect. And yeah, it's good to see her back on top and winning some races.
Well, she's not just still in school. She actually started college this year. So talking to Stu Thorne back at the World Cups, they were saying that they were definitely taking it easy in terms of like getting that break and not trying to throw too much. I remember how hard going to college was. You know, that's the thing is, you know, she's been so good for so long that we should forget how young she is. And she carries herself like such a mature individual. It's like also dealing with, you know, going to college and all that other stuff. And while you're flying your first month of college, being in England for part of it and stuff. So, yeah, you know, I think it'd be a big test. She's the favorite probably for the U23 women's race coming up this weekend. So, you know,
yeah, and
I think it'll...
I you know, I don't want to go too long here, but if we just sort of jump over to Pan Ams for a minute, I think some of the biggest storylines just from the American racers are who is racing what. So, you know, we have Gage Hecht and Eric Brunner and Lane Mayer, who are all racing the U23. And these are three guys who we've seen on podiums of elite races all year long already. You know, you have Katie Klaus and Ruby West, who are racing in the U23 women. And again, two racers who have been up there. You know, Maddie Monroe's been on podium. She's racing in the juniors. It's just, it's the crazy thing about this that the elite fields can almost take a little, you know, sigh of relief that some of the best racers are too young to actually race in the open elites. That it's one of these things, you know, we can sit there and complain about everybody, you know, a race on the East Coast and a race on the West Coast. We're going to have races in the same venue where we kind of wish everybody was racing the same race. But I think what it just sets up for is we're going to see a full slate of races that lap times, I don't know if they're going to be any different between the juniors and the elites. You know, I don't know if Magnus Sheffield and Strohmeyer and Jared and all those guys in the junior race are going to be putting in much slower times than, you know, Gage in the U23s. And then, well, Curtis maybe a little, but heck, even Curtis in the elites. I don't know. That's the thing that's amazing. And it's something that I'm going to have my eye on, is just to see the comparative lap times, because there are so many fast people at the top of all of these fields.
So did we have, we had Pan Ams on the list, right?
Yeah.
For things to do. Well, so can I proffer, we like to do in the media, right? At least from like Cyclocross Magazine, you know, we're not like opinion based necessarily. Like, we'd like to do storylines that we're following. What are intriguing? So should we do, I want to do storylines that we're interested in for Pan Ams coming up. And to kick it off, I think Bill just did it. We assumed Curtis White was going to be the one smashing at the front, even though every weekend, Carrie, don't call me Kenny Werner, has been up there taking wins from him. So, you know, I think for me, I think we're all looking at Curtis and Kenny. But, you know, Stephen Hyde kind of lurking. Dude's won three straight national championships. Not a favorite. We're kind of sleeping on him. We don't know what we're going to get from him. So I'm intrigued to see what happens with that. And then you have Michael Vandenham, was very super happy for Curtis, but like Michael really wanted to win that race last year. Finished third the year before, second last year. A little bit of a wild card. You know, he's got the jersey again for the third straight year. So I just, that elite men's race, it seems like there's a lot going on, or we'll be like Lance Haydat, you know, someone that we weren't expecting come out and steal the crown.
Michael, what do you think?
Here's my storyline. It's going to snow. It's going to snow a couple of inches. It's going to snow on both days, apparently. Bill, I'm coming to help you shoot some video. I'm pretty excited about that. I haven't been to a snowy cross race before, so I'm excited to see that. I'm excited. I don't know like how riders ride in the snow really. How is that going to affect? Who's that going to affect? And like, you know, what is, you know, is snow comparable to mud? I don't really know. I was actually chatting with Sammy, and she was like, oh yeah, see you at Pan Ams. And I was like, you know, bring your thermal squid suit. And she's like, what? I'm like, it's gonna snow. And she's like, oh shit. So like, I mean, like, you know, this kind of weather can really catch people off guard. So that's my big storyline.
Well, so we have some different, there's different things can happen. We can have, say, Hartford 2017 Nationals snow, where it snows a bunch, but it snows like 10 inches, gets tamped down, and you're literally riding on snow. In that case, it's very slick, can get very icy. You can also have Hendersonville 2017, I want to say, when it snows, but it's also like 40 degrees and it just turns into thick, disgusting, sloppy, muddy, gross stuff.
Or you could have Henderson 2018, where you just go cross country skiing and don't have a race at all.
You don't, yeah.
So I think, I don't know, a couple inches, it really depends on whether or not it's going to melt. I mean, it could just end up being like one of those slick, like sounds like Cincy Day One was, where it's like a slip and slide and ice skating rink.
Yeah, we, you know, and when we were there last year, Zach, we went through, I think, every level of weather possible. It was sort of like Dante's cycle of weather, you know. I mean, we were rain, and I think we had sunshine and then rain, and then it was snowing while it was sunshine, and it was, and then just wind.
That was just during the Masters races when we were doing that broadcast.
That was crazy. Yeah. Maybe that opens it up for some of these Canadians. Maybe they'll have the advantage in that instance.
I do want to say, I take that back. Actually, I have actually raced in the snow. I can't believe I forgot this. My very first nationals was my very first year of racing cross, and it was in Boulder, and I was in the participant race. The non-championship. I was a Cat 4. I lined up at the back of like a 120-person field, and it was like, it was probably like 35. It was actually 40 degrees, but there was all the snow on the ground and slushy. And I made it about 300 yards before I had a flat tire. Oh. And that was it. I'd driven 3 days from New Orleans to Nationals. And that was it. And that was my first snowy race. So,
feel good story. All right. We're going to end on this. Since we're here, we got Pan Ams coming up. We're going to start with the men. Zach, who's winning?
My mouth is agape. I get to go first.
You get to go first.
You know what? Like, I'm going to go with Kenny.
Ooh. That's a good call. I was kind of leaning that way. Michael, what do you think?
Wow. Well, I mean, I was thinking White's got the strength. He's got the jersey. hard to beat that. Hyde has literally been lurking. He didn't race last weekend. You know, he's kind of been off and on this year. But I'm also going to pick Kenny because I've been touting it all media pit, the vlog bump. I'm calling it. It's the year he does it.
All right. Well, I got to go a little different here, and it's either going to be Curtis or Steven. And, you know, if it's messy, we kind of saw it at DCCX, saw it at Nationals. Ah, heck, I'm going Hyde.
All right, vote of conference. Right. All right. Well, that is something that is that you bring up. We've talked about Curtis being, you know, I mean, he's kind of kicked Carey's butt in the thick mud, but since he was a little bit more ice skatey, a little bit more greasy, and Kenny shined. He was a rainbow in the mud. If I can borrow.
I like
the title from a book. So I don't know. If we're talking about the genus of snowy conditions, it could be a situation where if it's slick and, you know, a little bit slimy, I guess would validate the Kenny pick, perhaps. I don't know. Right. It's just kind of an interesting, because it sounded like the mud was a little bit different at Cincy than it was at, say, Fayette Cross.
All right, Michael, you're starting out for the women. If you haven't been able to pull that up, I can tell you got Claire Hansinger out there.
I got it.
Ellen Noble looking for revenge from last year. We got Magli Rochette. We got Jen Jackson, who gave Rochette a little bit of a challenge at Canadian Nationals. Farringer's out there. What do you got?
So, I mean, I think it's really hard to not pick Magali, just the way she's been riding when she's racing. But I'm going to go with my home state and pick Clara.
All right. I'm just going to jump in here really quick and just pick Magali, and then I'll go on to you, Zach.
Oh, well, I thought for sure, actually, you were going to go with Ellen Noble, who is new to the vlogosphere. So she's a new vlogger. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I
just thought you're sort of going against your own thinking.
The vlog bump. So wait,
that you're picking Noble, Zach.
No, I thought maybe you would. You're the dude, you're the purveyor. You're the man with the vlog bump. No, I mean I think you kind of have to like go with Rochette, and I mean she's been consistently, I think, the best. She had a great weekend in Cincinnati, coming off second straight national championship, and it's on home soil. The Canadian bounce, the Canadian bump was real last year. Michael, you will experience it at that park.
I'm excited.
At Little Lake Park. It was real. There was some definite Canadian mojo from the fans.
The drop down from the from that curb bump was real too in the women's race.
Is there going to be poutine? Is this the part of Canada with poutine?
Well,
there's a wood fire pizza.
Oh, we got a food truck this year.
Oh, good.
What, no, we did. Is that what we got? Are you saying
I don't know. No, I'm saying that every restaurant in there just seemed to be a wood fire pizza place.
Oh, okay. Well, like, no, that was one of the critiques, remember? In our,
oh, for sure.
In
I remember.
The original media pit in the hotel room.
Exactly. We're stopping at Whole Foods in Toronto before we drive to Midland. I'm telling you that right now.
All right, good.
Oh, man. Well, to be fair, though, there's a Tim Hortons right around the corner from that Holiday Inn. I was hitting the Tim Hortons like every meal.
All right, we're moving on to the U23 men quickly here. Contenders, you got Alex Morton. Man, Ben Vichafanye. I think of him as being older. He's still in there. Of course, you got Gage Hecht, Eric Bruner, Gunnar Holmgren, who I think is the Canadian hopeful in that group. Lane Mars had a great year so far. Zach, we're starting out with you again.
How come you get to go first this time?
Oh, I get to go first?
Yeah, you get to go first.
Okay. This one for me isn't too difficult. I'm going with Gage Hecht.
Yeah, some of the boys gave him a tough fight for half the race last year, but yeah, Gage Hecht.
I mean, I want to go back on my vlog bunk track and pick Caleb Schwartz, but I'm going to go for Brunner.
All right. Cool. So U23 women, I think I get to go first this time. Katie Klaus.
I think it's going to be a good battle between Klaus and Ruby Webb. Just to go up against that, I'll go with the home country bump and go Ruby West, who's also licking her wounds after having a mechanical and not winning a Canadian Nationals. And I think this is the one that she's going to want. So I'm going West.
Yeah, I mean, so that makes me want to pick Sydney McGill, who actually beat her to be the U23. But I'm also going to pick Ruby West.
Ooh.
All right. Let's move on to the junior men. Michael, you're up.
I'm looking at the list here.
Like,
well, so Sheffield's not on the list.
He is. You have to hit the more button.
Oh, that's
we're teaching Michael. We're teaching Michael how to be a media member one click at a time here.
Why?
This is good. We're learning
more?
How to be media on the media pit.
Literally on air. Why is there a more button? Okay, so I've been hearing lots about the Strohmeyer and Sheffield battles. I'm gonna go with Strohmeyer because he's a CX Hero Devo guy. So,
awesome. I will say other strong riders in this. Lucas Stierwart came in third in Cincy. Jared Scott has been up on the podium all year. Ivan Gallego has been up there. Ian McDonald has had a great year. There's a lot of hitters in this race. I will just make it easy for me. I can't vote against Strohmeyer in here. I'm sort of locked into that pick. So, Zach.
I think one of the cool stories from Pan Am's last year was that earlier in the day, while Bill and I were broadcasting, Merritt Sheffield won the Masters, one of the Masters women's category. And then she got to watch the next day, she got to watch her son Magnus win. So I don't know if Merritt's racing again. I have not looked at the start list for the Masters fields, but so I'm going to go with Magnus. It was a great story. The Sheffields. I'm just going to be contrarian and go with that one, even though I don't know if we can have a double Sheffield Pan Am champ again.
Outstanding. All right, last one. junior women. Michael, there is a show more.
I clicked it. I'm on okay. it. I'm a quick learner.
I think that this one is really going to come down, I believe, to Lizzie Gonzalez and Maddie Monroe. That would be my guess. And I'm going with Monroe. That's my pick for this one. She seems to be on some good form and racing well. Zach, you're up next.
Well, we're on the topic. Have you seen Bridget Tooley's latest supercut?
Oh, yeah.
No, what's she doing now?
They hit a skate park, and it was pretty sick.
She's got skills. Definitely has skills.
I think it's tough to... Maddie Monroe, I think she had some great results early on, and, I mean, she's been... So it'd be a battle of kind of like Colorado versus New England, though. That would be super intriguing.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot of hitters in this junior girls women's race, but I think I'm going to go with Lizzie Gonzalez. Lizzie. I'm going for the Cannondale rider.
Sounds good. All right, guys. I think that's it. I think we did it. We're going to be at Pan Am's this weekend, and we'll see how we all did.
Yeah. All right. Are we going to do like, I was listening to some Car Talk episode, old Car Talk episode, Stump the Chump. So we'll have to revisit our picks and see what we actually said.
Sounds like a good plan. All right, Michael, I will see you in a few days. And, you know, we're going to keep working on Zach and try to convince him to come out to Midland and join us. You know, we have between now, Tuesday night and Friday to do this. Although you could just come up for Sunday, Zach.
That is true.
Yeah.
Okay, I will. What I will do you consider do with it. Your life? It's only an 11-hour drive. Yeah, it's only an 11-hour drive. So
it's only
no 22 big deal.
Hour, it's only a day. I mean, if you come up just for Sunday, then you can spend that other day just driving.
Think of all the podcasts you can listen to.
That is true. I mean, we would have to make this one go for like another like 17 hours or so for this one to fit the bill. So
some may feel like it's already gone that long. So I think this would be a good time to sign off and say that I will talk to you all next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Sweet.
All right.